Well, let's open the word today to John chapter 21, the last chapter of the book. And some of you are going, oh, thank goodness we're done. You know, I realize, I keep saying we've been doing this a year. We started it in November of 2016. So we're in our 15th month on John, and today's the last day on it. Next week is World Lead, and we'll hear a little more about that at the end of the service. But World Lead is our missions conference and a summit. We'll have about 35 people from over 15 countries here in all our Bible studies. Some of them will be up here. Francois will be teaching next week, and a lot of great things going on over the next week, starting next weekend to the following weekend. And then in 2 weeks from today, I'm going to begin a study, our study for the year, not that it will be in it the entire year, we'll take breaks, but in the book of Acts, the very next page on your Bible, what really happened to that fledgling little group of people in Jerusalem, and the book of Acts tells us. So we're going to learn about the young church in the book of Acts as we begin in 2 weeks. Also, lastly, I'm carrying too many things, we have a Gospel of John here. I have about 1,000 of them outside that we bought, and we would like you to take one or two for yourself, but also it's a great way to give to somebody, because I always tell people when they say, where should I start reading in the Bible? I always say, start in the Gospel of John. Well, the Gospel of John's kind of in the middle of the book. Sometimes it's easier to go, just read these 30 pages and take a look, and let's talk afterwards. So if you'd like to take one or two of these and give them out, please do, even if you own some, so you can give them away. They'll be on the tables in the back. John chapter 21 is the story of Peter and Jesus. There's other players in the storyline, but it really is about Peter and Jesus. We're going to learn about this and then grab some thoughts on it. There's three vignettes or three little pieces to this story. All takes place in the same morning, within a couple of hours of each other, but I've divided into three so we can kind of get a hold of it. So let's begin. 21, verse 1. After this, Jesus revealed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias, which is the Sea of Galilee, that lake up in the north where the most of them were from. And he revealed himself in this way. Story number 1. Verse 2, Simon Peter, Thomas called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, that's John, that's the writer John of this book, and his brother James, and two other of his disciples were together. Simon Peter said to them, I am going fishing. They said to him, we will go with you. They went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. This is a time when they were night fishing, obviously, in a boat. Now, we have found, not me, but they have found boats that are very much like the boats back then. In fact, they found one a few years ago that's identical. They even call it the Jesus boat, not that Jesus was in it. But it's a boat about as long as this, probably 25 feet long, maybe a little broader than my span, but maybe 8 feet broad, very much like a rowboat. You can stand in it, so it's not tipping. We think of canoes nowadays as small boats, but they were very floatable, so you could stand to throw the nets. They did not fish by line and hook. They fished by nets, and they did a lot of this fishing at night because that's when the fish were swarming, and I'm not a fisherman, but that's people, a lot of you fish by night as well. And so they went out, but they caught nothing. Verse 4, just as the day was breaking, Jesus stood on the shore, yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Most people believe they were in the northwest section of Galilee, fishing around the area that had the warm springs. There's this one section of the sea where there's springs underneath, just on the shoreline. It goes in, very much warming that part of the Sea of Galilee. Most of us from Florida don't realize this, you northerners do, but most bodies of water in the world are too cold to swim in, right? You Minnesotans, are you swimming in your those 10,000 lakes right now? Of course not. You want to go swim here off Boca Raton tonight? You can. because our waters are perennially warm, a little cooler in the winter, but they're still warm enough. The Sea of Galilee was cold. I've been in the Sea of Galilee many times. I've baptized in the Sea of Galilee. It is freezing. You get in, you get out. But there's one section that is warmer because it's fed by the springs. And a lot of the fish would come because of this plankton and the various things around that area. And this is where people believed that they were fishing, and Jesus was on the shoreline. The shore is a rocky shore. He might have even been on a rock or a stone, as many of you do when you go to a beach. You stand up so you can see out. That is the scene we're seeing here. So Jesus stood on the shore, yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. And Jesus yells out to them, "Children, do you have any fish?" Now we find out in a minute they're about 100 yards out. The Sea of Galilee is 5 miles wide and 12 miles long. So this is how we know they're right on the shore fishing here. They're not fishing out in the middle of the sea where it's very deep. They're fishing where the fish would normally be, by these springs. And they answered him, "No, we got no fish." Have you ever fished for a period of time and caught no fish? I have. That's why I don't go fishing anymore. It's just, if you don't want to catch fish, invite me, because you won't. So that's why I enjoy fish. I eat a lot of fish. I love fish. I am just not good at fishing. Jesus said, they answered, "No." He said to them, "Cast the net on the right side of the boat and you will find some." Now we're going to learn in a minute, they didn't know this was Jesus. So there's no miracle thinking on the side of the disciples. They're not thinking, "Whoa, that's Jesus. He knows more than we do. We'll do it." They just did it. Why? It's pretty simple. The sun's rising. Jesus is there. He's probably standing on some of the rocks there. He can see the water, and they're thinking he can see the fish. How many times have you been in this? I have done. I've been standing on a bridge, and people are fishing below me, and I'll go, "There's a school of fish over there." You've seen them, right? At certain angles, the way the sun is. And so they're thinking, I'm sure, because they didn't resist at all, that he can see the fish or the rippling of the water where the fish, just the tops of the fish, he could see it rippling, and he's saying, "Go to the right side." They didn't argue with him, nor did they think he was Jesus. So this is just a man on the shore screaming out, "There's fish over there." It's about 100 yards, so it's just longer than this room we're in, and he's screaming out to them, "Cast the net on the right side of the boat and you will find some." So they cast it. And now they were not able to haul it in because of the quantity of fish. That disciple whom Jesus loved, therefore, that's John, he's always very humble in his speaking of himself. John said to Peter, "It is the Lord." You'll notice when you read about John the disciple, John the apostle, he is very intuitive. Peter is more just kind of run into the situation, do what he thinks is best. John looks and sees it and is very intuitive. He goes, that's Jesus over there. And so he says it. Now, John's not the first to go run after what he thinks, but he knows that it's Jesus. When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, for he was stripped for work. He wasn't stripped naked, people. He was stripped down, and this is the opposite of what we do. This is important to understand as well. When you go out to jump off a boat, and you don't put on your garments. You take them off and just keep your bathing suit on or something so you can jump in. Peter was not a swimmer. So we've got to understand, because look what it says. It says, when Peter heard this, he put on his outer garment. So that's the robe. So obviously he's not thinking too much, for he had stripped for work and threw himself into the water. It doesn't say he stepped in. It doesn't say he jumped in. He didn't dive in. He threw himself in. Why did he throw himself in? Because Peter was not a swimmer. These people didn't swim in the Sea of Galilee. I've been at the Sea of Galilee for many, many times. First time I was there, I was 11 years old. And short of foreigners coming and saying they've been in the Sea of Galilee, people do not swim in the Sea of Galilee. It's just too cold. You just don't go swimming in the Sea of Galilee. So these people grew up around a sea that they never swam in. They fished, they boated, they probably saw beautiful sunrises and sunsets, but they didn't swim in. They might have put their feet in. So he just jumps in and moves forward. The other disciple came in the boat, dragging the net of fish. They were not far from the land, but about 100 yards off. Peter had to navigate 100 yards in an overcoat, a huge rope. Now, I don't think it was real deep, so he probably got where he was walking and just kind of running through the water as you do. And it's a beautiful scene. When they got out on land, they saw a charcoal fire in place with fish laid out on it and bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the more of the fish that you've just caught." So Simon Peter went aboard, hauled the net ashore full of fish. There were 153 of them. Just an aside, a lot of people have made a lot about this 153. Can I just say, I have studied this thing left, right, and it was 153 fish. Okay, it wasn't 150 or 160, it was 153. People said, well, that's how many this, that's how many that. You divide it by 17 and it equals this. And I'm like, my lands. I mean, I stopped reading all the numerology on 153. And if some of you believe 153 is a numerology number, go for it. But I just think he had a lot of fish. And it was 153 when they counted it. And they went and got it. But the beautiful thing, it says, the net was not torn. It was overflowing, kind of like the Psalms that says, my cup runneth over. My nets ran over, but they didn't break. This is so cool. So he brings it in, and Jesus said to them, and this is so beautiful, red letters, come and have breakfast. We could pass so quickly over this, but just pause for a moment and think of all the times in the Bible where God and Christ invited people to a meal. Psalm 23, there's a table prepared for us. The whole Passover in Exodus is a meal. There's meals all the time. He's saying, come and have breakfast. Jesus is inviting us, inviting them by application in a moment, inviting us to have breakfast. Now, none of the disciples dared ask him, who are you? They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them, and so were the fish. This was now the third time that Jesus was revealed to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. Story number one is a story of fishing and having breakfast with Jesus. Hold that thought. Story number two. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Again, they got to pause here for a minute. We know in a few moments that Jesus and Simon Peter stood up and started walking so they could have a private conversation. We'll see that in a moment. We don't know that now. They're not sitting at the fire with everybody else. They've gotten up and they're kind of walking. Who knows if they're walking around or walking down. I don't know where they're walking, along the shore most likely, and they're having a conversation. Important to recognize that Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon. Now, if you know your Bible, the first time Jesus meets Peter, his name is not Peter, it's Simon. Simon means small pebble or stones, little bric-a-brac rocks. Peter means huge stone, Petros, Boutros, if you're Arabic. It's this huge sense that Peter, he said, you'll no longer be called Simon, you shall be called Peter. You remember that? It's early in this book. Now, for the first time, we see him call him Simon again. Kind of goes back to the beginning. He doesn't say Peter, which he's been calling him now for 3.5 years. He calls him Simon, son of John. He doesn't say Simon Peter. John calls him Simon Peter, but he doesn't. Jesus calls him Simon, son of John. Do you love me more than these? Well, what is the these? So there's the guys sitting there. There's the fish. There's the leftovers of breakfast, and they're walking away. And Jesus goes, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? So who are the these? And that is a great question. I'll give you three choices, all of which are good. One is, do you love me more than these disciples love me? See, do you love me more than these love me? That's choice one. Two is, do you love me more than you love the disciples? These are your buddies. These seven guys that have come together after leaving Jerusalem obviously love each other. They came back to the Sea of Galilee, which is 2 days' walk back up there. And they obviously have had business together. They love each other. They're going to move on in their life together. So he goes, do you love these guys more than you love me? Or third, it could be, do you love fishing more than you love me? Do you love the fish? The fishing. So do you love me more than they love me? Do you love them more than you love me? Do you love fishing more than you love me? We don't know the answer. And I think there's a reason we don't know the answer, because it's a question that you can be asked. Do you love Jesus more than, and you put in the dot, dot, dot. Is there something in your life that you love more than you love Jesus? It's a beautiful scene of us entering into the story. He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said to him, then feed my lambs. Just underline the word feed. Feed my lambs. He said to him a second time, and Jesus said to Peter the second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said, tend my sheep. Feed my lambs, tend my sheep, just another way of saying it. He said to him a third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time. You see, Peter the first time said quickly, I love you, Lord, more than all of these. Whether he meant the guys, their love, or the fish, he says, I love you. And Jesus repeats it by the third time. Peter's a little like grieved over this thing. Is Jesus not getting this? There's a purpose behind it. Now, here's another thing that you can read forever, like the 153, the changing of the word love. Well, let me just say something. First of all, Jesus and Peter were speaking Aramaic. This was written in Greek. So the words love in Greek are different than the words of love in Aramaic. So we've got to be careful in saying that these words love, one was agape and one was phileo and one was something else. And I can go there with that, but just realize that whether it was that specific or he's just saying, do you love me? Do you love me? Peter, do you really love me? That's how he said it. Do you love me? Yes, Lord. Do you love me? Yes, Lord. Do you really love me? And he was grieved, but he said, yes. Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. So that's where Peter put down the God stake. You're God, you know everything, and he brings back all that he knew about Jesus and said, you're God, you know everything, I love you, and I know that if I didn't love you, you would tell me because you know whether I love you or not. So don't lie to Jesus, by the way. What good does that do in your prayers to lie to him? I hear people pray, and I know they're not telling the truth, as if God doesn't know the truth. Now, I may not know the truth, or the people listening to your prayer may not know the truth, but the person you're praying it to does know the truth. So you might as well fess up at the beginning and just start telling the truth with him. And he says, feed my sheep. So he said, feed my lambs, tend my sheep, tend my lambs, feed my sheep. Incredible sense of importance of Peter has a work ahead of him. There is a work ahead of him. And in fact, in 1 Peter chapter 5, don't turn there, but it talks about, Peter talks about shepherding the flock. I mean, this whole concept of shepherding that Peter goes through in his epistles comes out of this passage, I believe. Verse 18 tells us this, something very important. Let me just give you an editorial comment. Peter was killed, we think by Nero, in 63 or 64 A.D., we know this from, I just lost his name, Origen and Clement, who lived in the 90s, who wrote some of the history. It's not in the Bible. It's extra biblical. So Peter probably died in 63. Paul, not related to this story, but the Apostle Paul, who we'll meet in Acts, probably was killed in 64 AD. This book, the book of John, was written probably about 70 AD. This book, the entire Gospel of John, was written after Peter was dead. Okay, so don't think that this story happened and then 3 years later they wrote the story down. It's years later. John is older. He's in Ephesus. He's the apostle and the leader of the church of Ephesus. He's been out to Patmos and all those issues. And he's writing this book to the gospel, mostly to people who were not alive or believers or in Jerusalem during the time of the resurrection. So he's writing so that they can believe, right? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet believe, that we learned last week. So that with that editorial comment that I've just made, they would have known that. We don't. Let's read this next verse, 18. Truly, truly, I say to you, this is Jesus to Peter, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go. This he said to show by what kind of death Peter was to glorify God. So what happened here? Peter was crucified. He was martyred for his belief. Some say upside down. That's the tradition of the church. We don't have any credible evidence of that. That comes much later. So whether it was upside down or right side up, it was a painful death that Peter did. And so when he said, you dress yourself when you're young, but someone else will stretch out your hands, it's a very amazing picture of a crucifixion. And he said this, and it's important that the people who read this would have known this. That's why they editorialize it by saying, in parentheses, this he said to show by what kind of death Peter would glorify God. Everybody reading this knew that Peter died in Rome about 10 years ago, 6 to 10 years ago. If they were reading this later, might have been 10 or 15. And then as the church started reading it and the initial people had died, they would have known that Peter was crucified for his faith. This is important because Peter was the guy who denied Christ. Very easily, if John had left the gospel finished in the last chapter, which is the end of the story, many people would have never known about Peter. While Peter went to Rome, they would have known about him, but they didn't have email and all the satellites and everything, so no one would have known. That's why John puts this in to let everybody know that Peter has been restored to the faith, and not just restored, but became a great man of the faith. And it's an important thing. And after Jesus had said these things, he said to Peter, do you see the two red letter words? What is it? Follow me. This is huge. Follow me. That is the first words Jesus said to Peter. Way back at the beginning of the story, it actually says, come, follow me. So he says, follow me. End of the second story. Third story. We'll come back and tie them all together in a moment. 20. Peter turned and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following them. That's how we know they were walking. Jesus and Peter are walking. John, being the intuitive guy he is, wants to hear the story. John's kind of right behind him. The rest are somewhere still finishing their breakfast or just kind of amazed at this whole scene. The disciple whom Jesus loved, the one who also had leaned back against him during the supper and had said, Lord, who is it that is going to betray you? So we all know it's John. Everybody knows. John's just not about to say his name. When Peter saw him, he said to Jesus, Lord, what about this man? It's a great scene. Jesus, Peter, they're walking. They notice John right there. And Jesus says, follow me. And John and Peter looks back and says, what about him? Because he was the guy that was at the cross. He's kind of the guy who never did anything bad. Of course he did, but he's not recorded that he did things bad. You kind of hate those kind of people, don't you? never do anything bad. John was a great guy. When Peter saw him, "Lord, what about this man?" Jesus said to him, "If it is my will that he remain until I come, what is that to you?" In other words, he's not saying John is not going to die. There's some saying that John never died. What he's saying is, it's none of your business what I do to John. And then he stops and goes, "You follow me." Again, he says, "Follow me." And then in this next scene, he says, "Follow me." So the saying spread abroad among the brothers that this disciple was not to die. Yet Jesus did not say to him that he was not to die, "But it is my will that he remain until I come. What is that to you? If it is my will." So there's a big if there. 24. This is important. Again, an editorial comment made by John. "This is the disciple who is bearing witness about these things and who has written these things." This is the stamp that says, it is me, John, who has written this entire book. I want you to know that I wrote this book. And who has written these things? And then it says, "And we know that his testimony is true." What does that mean? And we know. He's never used the word "we" here. It's always this person or that person. There's no "we" in this. I believe, as do most, that these are the elders of the Ephesian church where he wrote this book. John is writing this book. Most of the time, the writers did not physically write it. Now, Luke probably did, but the other guys may not have physically wrote it. Certainly, Paul didn't write his books. He wrote them, but he didn't physically autograph them, you know, because he had all these guys like Erastus and other people that wrote them. I mean, physically wrote down them. It's a big word, amanuensis. And so John's probably giving this, and there's his elders there, and it's being written at the end, and at the end, they put their stamp on it and says, "We know that his testimony is true." That's for the whole book. These elders are putting their stamp on this book. It's an incredible picture there. That "we" is key. Last verse of the whole thing. "Now there are also many other things that Jesus did." That's great. John just kind of goes, "You know, I think Jesus did a few other things." And then he goes, "Were every one of them to be written, I suppose that the world itself could not contain the books that would be written." Now, I know what you're thinking. They didn't write books back then. And there were only a few books. Don't believe that. There was the Library of Alexandria. There was the library in Timbuktu. There was the libraries in Mesopotamia, in Babylon, in modern-day Persia or Iran. There were libraries in Greece, in Athens, in Sparta. There were libraries in Rome. They didn't have libraries in every city. Ephesus had a huge library. In fact, you can go to that library today. They found it about 100 years ago. It's one of the most beautiful ruins in the world of the first century. You go to it and you're just amazed. There were libraries, and he's saying they couldn't fill all the works about Jesus. Now, end of the whole story, I want you to write down three words to remember this whole story of today. Will you do it? Fish, feed, and follow. Can you do that? Fish, feed, and follow. Now, there's two words for fish. What is it? Well, there's the fish, the noun, and then there is fishing, the verb. I'm talking about fishing. We have been called, if we're going to bring this to today, we have been called, as throughout this entire passage, from the first passage where it said, "Come follow me," in the early parts of John and the early parts of Matthew, "Come follow me and I will make you fishers of" what? Men, women, children, people. God has called us to follow him and come to him and also to fish for people. It's a beautiful picture of fishing. And when we get into Acts in a few weeks, we're going to see that the early church was no longer those 70 people or the 120 people. There were added to them one day 3,000 people. You see, they were fishing. The Holy Spirit was the one doing the work. And again, they weren't fishing as we think of this. They were casting the nets. We'll talk about what casting the nets mean nowadays, but fishing is so important. Number two, feed. Now there's the noun feed and there's the verb feed. Again, feed is like what you feed to cattle, the feed, it's the food. What I'm talking about is the process of feeding, of tending the flock. We have been called to help feed. This is a spiritual thing. Yes, we feed physically, but a spiritual thing of feeding others. This goes to the concept with Roger and Rachel. God has blessed us, so what? We can bless others. Do you know what's amazing? Is the school here, I see four or five of the school teachers and all, who built into Roger's life, Yuli, who's a pastor of another church up in Ocala, not even here, he's a pastor of another church, he's getting some credit, if I could say this in a very spiritual way, for what happens in Lakeland. You and I never go to Lakeland, at least I don't. But there's going to be some spiritual fruit and food and results and discipleship going on in Lakeland coming weeks and months and years, God willing, because of them. Those of you that built into Roger and tended Roger's life and Rachel's life, now they're going on to tend other people's lives. Isn't that incredible? As we tend each other's lives, we can help others. Now, it doesn't mean we go off to Lakeland. It could mean you go off to your office tomorrow and you get discipled here, or maybe you lead a Bible study and you help others who go elsewhere. It is important that each of us are responsible for helping to feed others. I think we are physically, but we are definitely spiritually responsible for feeding other people. It is not just about Bill, Elizabeth, Roger, Rachel, Clay, Sherry, the ones you pay to do the work up here. It is all of us. We all have the opportunity to go fishing and to go feeding people. And then the last one, which is so cool and so important, is to follow. The last F, follow. If you read the early red letters of Matthew, the early red letters of John, it's all about come follow me. Come follow me. The last red letters of this book is follow me. Pretty simple, isn't it? When all is said and done, what is Jesus asking us to do? Follow him. Follow him. And a lot of other things. I'll make you fishers of men. I want you to do some discipleship. I want you to grow. I want you to this. But the book ends of this whole story is follow me, follow me. And he started with Peter. And this book, the book of John, ends with Peter. Started with Simon, ends with Peter. And very interesting, and God is calling you, each of us, to follow him. What happens in the intervening days, weeks, months, and years is between you and God. Good things happen, bad things happen, easy things happen, hard things happen, painful things happen, great things happen, a lot of things happen, but what we know is that we are engulfed in the parentheses of follow me, follow me. And that's the whole story. In two words, follow Jesus. Let's pray together.